Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Plum Love Foods Live. I know there's no intro music yet, but I want to get on here just for a minute and just dedicate this particular program tonight to a gentleman named Larry Mangum. Larry was not a TV chef. Larry was not a gentleman who was hosting a TV show. He never won any crazy awards, but what he did do was run a restaurant and teach me a lot of the things that I know to this day. We lost Larry to a heart attack on Tuesday. Out of the blue, he was at work. He collapsed and did not make it to the hospital. So rest in peace, Larry, GBM for life. And this one's for you, buddy.
Welcome to Plum Love Foods Live, the number one live audio culinary industry show for chefs by chefs. Hosted by multi-time Food Network winner, award-winning chef, TV host and global icon, and national treasure,
at least in his mind,
Chef Plum. So close that saute station, make sure the grill is off, and grab that shift drink, because we're about to mess up your mise en place. Here's Chef Plum.
Yeah. What's happening, everybody? Happy Thursday night. I know. You're like, the week's about to start, Chef. Why are we doing this show tonight? Well, I'm still figuring out my new schedule. I apologize, but we're going to get it. We're going to get it worked out. I promise you. Welcome to the program, everybody. Glad to have you. We got a great guest tonight, Chef Jason Santos, one of my new buddies. He's a great guy. He was just at Mohegan Sun with us. Much love to him. He's got a brand new cookbook coming out. He's going to be on Today Show tomorrow. The dude's just making moves. That's all it is to it. He's making moves. That music can only be one thing. Ladies and gentlemen, we're joined right now by the one and only Forking Chef. What's up, Jeffy?
Hey, living the dream, Daddy. How you doing?
I am good, man. Yeah, I had to do that part in the beginning there, man. Tuesday, I lost a really good friend of mine. I hadn't spoke to him in years, but that's one of the things about the restaurant business, man, is that you meet people and they make such an impact on your lives. And a gentleman by the name of Larry Mangum, he died. He lived in Virginia, in Richmond, where I kind of cut my teeth for a long time. And he was there. He passed out. Had a heart attack and didn't make it to the hospital.
Oh, man. I'm really sorry to hear that. Heart goes out and prayers to his family and everyone that's involved there.
Well, you know, I told some, you know, some guys I had spoke to from back in the day, I told them, I said, you know, if one thing we should get out of this, you know, a gentleman named Trey had called me, who I hadn't spoke to in years, and he called to tell me what had happened. And I said, if we get one thing out of this, it's that we should at least, especially as good brothers and sisters that we love and still think about now, you know, for twice a year, we should just make contact, you know, send a text, call, just say, hey, what's up? Hope you're doing good. Thinking about you. Just to maintain contact, man, because you never know what happens tomorrow. You just don't know.
No, you don't. And yet you're not promised it either. So I think that's, you know, I'm a big advocate of stuff like that. I love telling people I love them. You never know when you're going to see them again. And it's important to, right. You know, I think it's important to leave on that note. So, you know,
so
this one's for Larry.
That's it. That's for Larry. GBM, a.k.a. Gay Black Man. That's what he called himself. True story. When I turned 21, this was a long time ago, when I turned 21, we were at the restaurant. And the restaurant had two sides. Had a club on one side and a restaurant on the other. And I was annihilated. Because, you know, back in the day, I'm drinking Long Island iced teas, Flamin' Dr. Peppers, all the gimmick drinks, right? Literally, all the gimmick drinks. There's a picture of me passed out on the restaurant side in a booth with my shirt all the way up, like my hairy navel hanging out, my pants undone. And for literally a year, my wife, a.k.a. girlfriend at the time included, had convinced me that Larry had molested me while I passed out. And to this day, oh, he took God. That to his grave. He never said he didn't do that. Which is questionable, because I don't know if I liked it. I mean, what happened? I don't know. Like, it's just a weird thing in life. But
and it's all love in the dark, baby.
Hey, Jesus Christ. It's the restaurant industry, man. That's what we do. You make great friends and you make you know, relationships with people that can be very strong because you know the battles they've been through. And much like we did this year at Mohegan Sun Food and Wine, one of the best festivals on the planet, your first year doing it with me, Jeff. What do you think?
Amazing. Dude, what a blowout. I had such a good time. I mean, from just doing the demo, interacting with the people, interacting with all the awesome chefs. I mean, me and you always have a blast. So it's like, I mean, we probably could have went to Larry's funeral and had almost as much fun, but it was awesome.
I mean, what a collection of talent, right?
Dude, I felt like just a little kid around a lot of those chefs. I really did. They were just like, they were just so focused and everyone was working so hard and like seeing the dishes that people pulled off, for a tasting and stuff. I was really impressed. A lot of people brought their A game and it was awesome.
Well, they bring their A game and they're still super cool and very nice, which is what I like, man. Cause a lot of times I think about chefs as being like bikers. Like if you walk into a biker bar, you know, all of them kind of stare at you for a little bit until you look at each other for a few minutes. And then next thing you know, you have a beer. Now you're all hugging and shaking hands and whatnot and being buddies. And tonight's guest is definitely, you know, no different when it comes to that. He's an extremely talented chef. He's got 3 restaurants in Boston. He's on the Today Show tomorrow. His brand new show, Bar Rescue, it's not a brand new show. It's just signed for a 7th season. It's going to start after the Super Bowl. I mean, this guy's got everything going on. You got to check him out. Our good buddy and friend, Chef Jason Santos. What's up, bro?
What's up? Dude, how are you?
You're a traveling machine. I text you and I talked to you today, and I was like, there's no way he's going to want to do this with all the travel he's doing.
Yeah, man, I was in like 4 states in the last 72 hours. And I was actually supposed to fly from New York to Nashville to do the Pickler and Ben show, but they rescheduled on me while I was in New York till the end of next month. So I'm actually psyched I got to come home a day early. So
good for you, man. Good for you, man. That's awesome, dude. And you got this cookbook coming out. You got the restaurants going. You were on Hell's Kitchen. Like, I'm trying to figure out where to start. And I think with you, I just got to start at the beginning, man. I mean, I know like you've always kind of been cooking food your entire life, right?
Yeah, I mean, I sort of like always joke that I came out of the womb making aioli, you know? I've always wanted to cook.
That's kind of gross if you think about it.
It's disgusting, actually. But however, it might be true. I did, but I think there's a little bit of truth. I mean, I've been cooking like my whole life. 8 years old, my parents got divorced. My grandparents would pick us up often from school while like my parents were figuring things out. And I used to just cook in her kitchen, and I just really loved it. 8, 9 years old, started watching Jacques Pepin and Julia Childs, and just decided that, you know, cooking was for me. You know, home ec, all those cooking classes in high school, went to college, graduated, you know, super young. I was like 19 and a half when I graduated college.
Did you go to culinary school or no?
I did. I went to culinary school right in Boston, and I got out of culinary school, and I got my first job for the first chef. Was a James Beard Award winner, Chris Schlesinger, who had East Coast Grill in the Blue Rooms. That was my first job out of the college. You know, most people are slinging stuff. You know, I got to work for a James Beard winner, like first job. So awesome. It definitely pointed me in the right direction. You know, I cooked for a whole bunch of years with him. I went to Tremont 647 in the south end of Boston. I was a chef there for 7 years, on to Gargoyles in Davis Square. And then I decided 6 years ago that I should open a restaurant. And it was the best thing I've ever done.
Now, you opened a restaurant right now. After you did Hell's Kitchen, right? Which is a pretty smart move.
I did. I did Hell's Kitchen when I was a chef at this restaurant called Gargoyles. Gargoyles was like really funky. We were doing super like, you know, probably one of the most nouveau kind of restaurants in Boston, kind of like WD-50 in New York. Like we're doing crazy stuff. Ooh. And, you know, I spent more time like sort of researching than I did cooking. And, you know, it was just – I was kind of like ready for this change. And one of my friends, we were on the way to Chinatown in Boston for some dim sum. And she said, you know what? You'd be awesome for Hell's Kitchen. I was like, all right. You know, not really my thing, but I'll go to tryouts. And I ended up waiting like 5, 6 hours.
Jesus,
dude. And, I interviewed and I was in the room with the producers for like literally under 2 minutes. And I just – you know, I thought I just nailed it, tons of personality and – you know, the whole process is like 3-4 months and back and forth to LA for interviews. And finally, I got asked to do the show, which was at the time I was super cool. Now it would scare the hell out of me. But then I was a young, you know, young chef, eager, and I did the show and I did really well. I was the runner up season 7. Yeah. And, you know, it was to date, it was actually the most popular season of all time, which is pretty cool.
It's a great season.
I think maybe. Yeah, you know, it was just a lot of like ups and downs and craziness, and I accidentally slept with the girl in the show.
Which, I was supposed like, to go like and Holly, right?
Yeah, yeah, Holly. Yeah, so it was a good time.
Did you say accidentally? You
know, one thing leads to another. You trip and
oops, I fell.
Yeah, how'd that happen? Yeah, yeah. I remember actually we were in a hot tub and I said to her, I said, "You're welcome. I just bought you 5 more episodes." pretty funny, you know. So,
well,
but it was cool, you know. I mean, it's a TV show; it's produced. So I was there, and yeah. I thought it was a cooking competition. I was ready to win it, and then I realized, yeah, it's a little bit more about personality and stuff. So I sort of made sure I put on a show, did all the right things, you know, walked in the room first because I get on camera first. Like, I kind of feel like I played the system and it did me really well, you know?
Well, I've talked to a lot of people who have been on that show, and they tell me how much they're surprised how little they actually see of Gordon on the show.
Oh, really? See, for me, it was the opposite. We were with him 10 hours a day, every day for like 2 months, you know?
No way.
I actually thought it was super cool because he's, you know, if someone's going to yell at me and verbally abuse me every day, it's going to be someone with like 17 Michelin stars, you know, and that was him.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, I learned some really cool things working for him. I was one of two professional chefs on the show. So there's 16 of us. And there was another guy, coincidentally, from Boston, who was a professional chef, trained by, you know, some phenomenal chef, James Beard Award winner as well. And everybody else was kind of like, you know, all over the place. But so there wasn't a lot of like higher end chefs on the show. So, you know, I had a little bit more experience. It just, you know, I took it and I took what I knew of television thus far. And I just sort of turned it into something that for me was amazing. I mean, most people go on there and just get destroyed by him. And I actually came out pretty unscathed. So
yeah, he didn't say too much bad shit to you.
Really, you know, and we stayed in touch after. And when I was building my first restaurant, he actually flew to Boston, came to the restaurant just to hang out, just to check on me, just to like sign. We bought a whole bunch of books for my cooks.
Did he really?
Super, super nice guy. Yeah, super nice guy.
That's awesome, man. So you telling me you could text Gordon Ramsay right now?
You know, it's weird. I haven't actually talked to him in a handful of years because, like, what do you text him? Hey, man, how's your Thanksgiving? Like, I don't really have to say. The guy's super busy. But when I was fresh off the show, I actually, when he was doing Kitchen Nightmares, I helped him cast a couple restaurants in Boston. I came to set a few times, but you know, like anything, you just slowly grow apart. Now it's kind of weird. His personal assistant, which is a really funny story, who I spoke to a lot because, you know, I have to go through him to get to Gordon.
Right.
He is now assistant director on Bar Rescue. So it's funny. You have a lot of Gordon Ramsay stories. So pretty fun,
man. That's hysterical, dude. And I'll be remiss if I don't ask, when's the last time you saw Holly?
Oh, man, it was probably like 6 months after the show, so probably 8.5 years ago.
No, that long? Wow.
Yeah, the show is almost 10 years ago, 9 years ago, something like that, and we stayed in touch, you know, quote-unquote, for probably about a year after, like, visited her a couple times, and that was sort of it. I mean, TV show portrayed it into way more than it was. Like, they made it sound like this love story. It was not a love story, I assure you, you know? So, but I still get people ask me today, like, you know, what's up with Holly? What is she doing? It's kind of crazy how that just sort of sticks when you accidentally sleep with someone on major network, you know?
Take note, ladies and gentlemen, don't accidentally sleep with somebody on a major network show. That's what we do there. You know, I think what's awesome, though, and I preach it on this program to so many young cooks. We have a lot of young cooks and culinarians who check this program out. And it was actually really cool, man. When we were at Mohegan, you know how they have all the students come in from Johnson & Wales to help out?
Yeah. Super
so
cool.
Many of those kids said to me, dude, we love the podcast. We love the radio show. I was like, that's awesome. And that's what I'm talking about
Really awesome. So it's super. I think it's cool when a young chef recognizes me more than like someone who's home watching TV. You know, I think when I was in culinary school, these guys were like gods to me. You know, I would get starstruck seeing a chef. And I kind of forget about it now. And it's so to see all these students want to take pictures and sign things. I mean, it's unbelievable, you know, to see them and get that passion and ready to like get in the kitchen.
Well, I think it's great for guys like, you know, you definitely on a much bigger scale than me. But to take the time to talk to those young guys and give them the chance and, you know, maybe even more so than some of the other people who would be at an event that might not give them the time of day, you know, to actually pull them aside and say, hey, great job, or, you know, keep doing what you're doing, that kind of stuff, man. It's awesome to see.
Yeah,
that.
I think it's cool. I mean, like, I don't take myself very seriously, to be honest. I take my businesses very seriously, and I think that's why I don't take myself. I mean, I often joke that, like, I just make cold food hot. There's people that cure cancer and are splitting the atom. I don't do that, you know? So I don't really think what I do is anything epic. I love what I do, and I'm happy to share it with everybody, but I will always make time because I love food. I love talking about it. Like, it never gets old. It's not just my job. I mean, it's literally my life.
Dude, well, that's what it's supposed to be, and it bleeds out of you. You can hear it when you talk. The passion comes out of you when you talk about it. But one of the things that I talk a lot about here and with everybody that's on is that, you know, when you do a show, when you do, you know, whether it's a Food Network show, whether it's a major network show, whether even if it's just like an online show at this point these days, being able to take that and parlay it into something, about not sitting on your ass and waiting for it to come to you. You know, I took my first Food Network thing I did on Chopped and kind of grew everything else from there. It's kind of what you did too, which is great.
Yeah, I mean, I never been on TV other than like local stuff. I think I did one like, you know, Today Show type thing a long time ago, and I just decided, you know what, I can cook, I can back it up, so the TV is just an added bonus, and I'm gonna be ready. I remember being on the show, I filmed it, I came back, we had like 8 months before it aired, and I built a website, I hired a publicist, I got an agent, and I just, you know, I was like, this is my 5 minutes of fame, I'm gonna take that and parlay it into the next 5 minutes of fame. So you gotta hustle. I mean, it's a grind, and it's just, a lot of people in Hell's Kitchen on my season would call me and be like, dude, how'd you get this? I'm like, I just hustle. Like, I often don't say no, you know, I will, yeah. No big, no small, it doesn't matter to me. It's like, I do everything, because you never know who's watching, you never know who's a part of it, but I think it's just all important.
Definitely. If you want to learn more about Chef Jason Santos, you can go to his website at chefjasonsantos.com. You can check him on Instagram at jason64764. You can see him on Twitter at jasonsantos.com. At Chef Jason Santos.
This is a mess.
He has a new book on pre-order. I know. I just fell apart there. He has a new book available on pre-order right now called Buttermilk and Bourbon. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Walmart, or anywhere books are available.
Dude, was writing the book one of the hardest, longest things you ever did?
You know, it's funny. I had got offered a book deal 2 years ago, and I was super busy. And it's not like my thing. Like, I personally don't have a bucket list with a book on it. I think it's good for my brand. It's good for my restaurants. It's good. But it's not something I personally wanted to write a book. So I actually turned it down because I was super busy building the third restaurant. And then it finally came around again, and I said, look, I'll do this book, but I want either a co-author or a ghostwriter or something that can do this for me. I don't have the attention span. It's not something that I'm passionate about. And they said, sure, we'll get you all that, but we need you to write a sample chapter opener, and send it to us so we can start the pre-sale. So I wrote a chapter, and I sent it to them, and I got a phone call immediately from the editor. She's like, look, you are an unbelievable writer. You're funny. It's like such a great story. You have to do this. And I was like, oh, really? I'm a good writer? Sure. Okay. Like, I'll do this.
Wow.
And then I started doing it. I was like, God, this sucks, you know? And it took me almost 2 years to do this book. I mean, it's just stuff I never thought about. It's about, you know, I cook and I'm like, oh, season with salt to taste. Well, there's no to taste, you know, in a cookbook. It's everything's precise. So I had to take what I thought I knew about cooking and just completely redo it, geared towards someone that in theory doesn't really have much of a clue. So it was just, the attention to detail was like over the top. I mean, it was, you know, one recipe took me almost 4 hours. So I had 75 recipes in the book. I mean, it's, you know, you're pushing 3,000 hours. I mean, it was a ton of work. And then photographer came from New York, and that was a 5-day shoot. You know, one of every dish. I mean, it was awesome. I mean, now the fact that it's done, I couldn't be more proud. You know, the publisher, the editor of all personally called me and said, look, we're not just saying this. This is one of our favorite books out of the publishing house. But I'm such an all or none type guy. It's either I'm not going to do it or I spend everything I have doing it. And that's exactly what I did. I'm super proud of it. And I think it gears towards the home cook, but it's also super creative. So I think chefs can cook out of it. And I think it's just a good book. And I think that, you know, the photos alone, Ken Goodman from New York, he does a ton of cookbooks. The photos are literally 50% of why I think this book is so phenomenal. I certainly can't take all the credit. It came out. I mean, I couldn't believe how well it came out. I'm super psyched to share it with everybody.
I can't wait to check it out, man. I really can't wait to check it out for sure. I'm going to jump on that pre-order 100%. And the coolest part is, man, like, so many, I've seen people who have books out. Dude, you got your book in Walmart. How on earth does that happen?
Yeah. I'm not real sure, to be honest. I just we just pushed it everywhere, small, big. I mean, I have it little mom and pop shops around Boston, and just, you know, again, I just say yes to everything. And
yeah.
I signed up already for some book signings in these little places, and all of a sudden Walmart calls and we're like, we love the name of the book, we think it's super cool, and we want to carry it. I mean, that alone,
you're like,
you
yes.
know, I'm not an editor, I'm not a publisher, so I don't necessarily know how well that translates, but I mean, it's Walmart. I'm pretty sure it's going to make the book do exceptionally well.
Well, because they're going to actually buy the product,
yeah.
and then they put it in the store.
Right, right. So, I mean, it's pretty cool. I mean, I look forward to seeing it on shelves. I mean, I remember the first time I was on the radio, I couldn't wait to see, you know, hear myself on the radio and the TV. But I think this book is a little bit, it's more tangible. It's like something that I can see, you know, and I'm psyched. I'm psyched that it's over and I'm psyched that it's done, but I'm psyched that it came out and I'm super proud of it. You know, I'd be really bummed if I didn't put, you know, as much effort into it and it didn't come out as good. And it's something that you have to, you know, it comes along with you everywhere you go now. It's like you're an author now, you know, and it just,
right.
It's just one of those cool things that I didn't realize how much I wanted it until I have it. Now that I have it, I'm like, God, I wish I did this like years ago. It's just such a cool thing to have. And I think it helps a brand and sort of helps you, you know, look a little, have better credentials and, you know, and it's just a good talking point.
Well, you put a lot of work and hard work and love into it, man. So then to see that kind of come to fruition, it's got to be amazing, you know?
Yeah, you know, second restaurant, Buttermilk and Bourbon, is a Southern restaurant. We're actually getting ready to start construction on a second one, but it's just so well received. People like love it. So I took all the recipes, you know, we do fried chicken biscuits, like the standard Southern fare, but we just, you know, the biscuits, I spent a year making these biscuits. Like wow. Every day in my other restaurant, I would make a recipe from scratch. You know, a lot of chefs will take a recipe off the interweb and twist it and put their own twist on it, which is super cool. I mean, we all do that. I do that. But the biscuits, I wanted to be from scratch. I literally took a bowl of flour and butter, and every day I tweaked the recipe to what I thought was like the best biscuit I've ever eaten.
Wow.
And I think it's cool where, you know, like every chef's like, oh, I make this the best and I make that. But truthfully, probably not. I mean, there's always better, faster. But I'm telling you, man, these biscuits, every time I eat them, I have a tear run down my cheek. They're so freaking good, you know?
That's awesome, man. I love that.
So they're all in the book. You know, everybody is like, you took all your signatures from the restaurant and put them in a book? I did. And I put them verbatim because I'm super proud of it. And look, if you can cook it better than me, than the restaurant, then you know what? You deserve to, because it usually doesn't translate like that. But it's I don't know. The recipes are just killer. They're all from Buttermilk and Bourbon. They're super fun. And I can't wait to cook out of it.
Well, dude, I can't wait to start seeing you do some TV for these, too, and pushing that cookbook out, because I was watching a bunch of TV segments with you, and you and I are brothers from another mother. I don't think you realize it, because what you do when you get onto doing a TV segment, whether it's local TV, whether it's national TV, I was watching you on The View. Wait, was The View? No, yeah. The Talk, right?
The Talk.
You're on with those girls. You command and control the segment, which is what I love. I think it's really important to do when you're the guest. Let the host drive the car, but you control the segment. Watching you do that, that's exactly what I do. That's exactly what I watch you do. And I actually told Jeff, I said, dude, you should watch how he controls the whole. Did I not tell you, Jeff? He controls the whole segment.
Absolutely.
I took a media class a long time ago. I was like super young. And they gave me a rubber ducky in my hand. They said, when you have the rubber ducky, you can talk. And when you're on TV, you don't ever want to not have the rubber ducky because you can't tell your story. So when you're, don't be rude, but never let go of the rubber ducky. So now I've just done enough. I got a phone call from The Talk. I remember what street I was on driving, and they said, do you want to be on the show? And I was like, are you kidding me? This is a massive show.
Yes.
I did one episode, and all of a sudden, 15 episodes later, you know, because I did a good job my first time. And that's the thing. It just, I wanted this. You know, I love doing TV and I love food. You know, my two favorite things in life are food and my personality or someone else's personality. I think they just, food and personality go so well together. And that's like my white picket fence. Like one day I'm going to have my own show. You know, I love doing that stuff. And I love preaching about food.
Well, dude, you know, it's funny because the entire realm of what we do now, especially guys like you and myself, I tell everybody, doing the TV stuff is a byproduct of 25 years of being a chef for me, which just sounds like the same thing for you. You worked your ass off in the kitchen, and now these things start to happen. You know, it's not...
100%. I think the one thing that people don't realize, and you know, you have people say, oh, this guy's on TV, is it's like this, you create this little like ecosystem, right? So it's like, you're on TV, which, you know, makes you popular, and then people come in your restaurant, and your food is good. So you feed them dinner, and then you sell them a book, and then they're psyched to see you, and then they see you on TV again. You know, and it's this little ecosystem that feeds each other. So, you know, I don't just go on TV because it's fun. I mean, it is a great little hobby, but I do it because I like to promote the restaurants on a broader scale. It gets people in the door. The restaurants are doing fantastic, and it just kind of feeds each other, and it's really fun for me.
But it's the world that we live in now. It's changing so much when it comes to that. The show that I host, Restaurant Road Trip, we would air, but the TV network we aired on cared more about the Facebook views than the actual people who watch it on their TVs, because it's not quite as you know, the whole like Nielsen ratings and all that stuff, it's not as tangible as looking at Facebook views. And you can say, hey, we had 90,000 people watch this video about local food, and they were based in this place. They watched this much of it. Here's how much money they make. Where in Nielsen, they're like, oh, well, you know, it's on this home. And because it's an on in a home, we count four people. We don't know if there's four people watching it, but we say there's four people there, so that counts as four views. It's interesting how that changes, so but digital is kind of becoming more and more.
100%. I mean, I think that's the way of the future. 10 years ago, when I was on Hell's Kitchen, I was, again, I'm like a nut about success. So I would have an episode air. Next morning, I would check Nielsen because I wanted to see if our episode was doing well. And I remember it was like 7.7 million viewers, you know, at Fox 8 o'clock on Thursday nights. And it was like unbelievable. Now it's like 3 million viewers, and it's still considered a huge success because that's just the standard now. The standard 10 years ago was very different. Where the standard now, it's a you know, less than a third, and that's considered great. Yeah, so the fact that it's all going digital and, you know, Amazon and Netflix and stuff, but I think it's cool. I think it gives everybody a fair chance, and I think, you know, your podcast, all these things, I think are just things that are as good as anybody else at nowadays. I think you are all in the ring, and you do what you want, and you hope that people dig it, and I think people dig your show.
Well, I think it's one of those things that you do, though, and you see, I mean, Lord, what was it, 40% of the country now doesn't have cable anymore, which I never thought we'd ever see that. That's something I never thought I would hear. You know what, really? But yeah, they don't. I mean, but having those things like I said, Amazon, Netflix, and these different streaming networks now creates more competition, and I think competition opens doors for people. So as opposed to worrying about whether we have enough television time, we have so many more opportunities now, where now you can sell a show to Facebook Watch and probably get paid more money than you would getting working on Bravo. You know, it's crazy.
Totally. I mean, I think back in the day it was Food Network and it was a monopoly, and that's it. You either were on the Food Network or you weren't. And now it's, I mean, there's 100 channels to be cooking on. There's 100, you know, you can create your own podcast if you want. You couldn't before. So now it's just fair game for everybody, and I love that.
Well, that's what happened with Food Network. You know, it was about a year ago now. I mean, Food Network was, they were going bankrupt, and they end up selling to Discovery Channel for like cents on the dollar or something. It's crazy. You know, it's just how much has changed. So, you know, thankfully it didn't go anywhere. I think it's a bad thing for them to go anywhere. But it was getting, think about it, what was on. It was getting ridiculous. It was just, everything was like, let's watch, you know, T-Boss from TLC, Vanilla Ice, and the midget from Austin Powers make pies against each other. Like, that's what it all became. It was just, come on, let's get back to cooking food, you know?
Yeah, it's a mess. It's a mess.
But you got your show, Bar Rescue. That's back after the Super Bowl, right?
Yeah, so we filmed. I mean, I have probably 5-6 episodes in the can now that are just waiting to air. Paramount, which it used to be Spike, is now Paramount, sort of same company, but they don't like to compete with football. I mean, at this point, nobody can really compete with football. So we just do reruns for the course of the football. So Super Bowl Sunday, this coming Sunday, next Sunday, brand new episodes of Bar Rescue, which is fantastic. And we just we had a little limbo there about the next season, but we just signed for 16 more episodes on season 7. So I will be leaving next month to travel the country with the amazing John Taffer, rescuing bars and restaurants in distress.
Dude, that is amazing. That's dope. Hey, you gotta go in there. You gotta put a fried cheeseburger on somebody's menu for me, all right?
Yeah. That's funny. Yeah, dude, you know, the thing with Bar Rescue, I'll tell you this. Out of all the TV I've ever done in my career, honest to God, this is the truth. Bar Rescue is so real, I can't even begin to tell you.
Really?
John Taffer goes nuts if it's not real. Everything is so real. It's not overproduced. If it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. They're not coaxed. I mean, it's... I was a fan of the show for a lot of seasons before I was on the show. And when I got there, I figured, okay, this is how it does. Yeah. Boy, was I wrong. And it's, these guys are really failing. The one that airs next, I was in... where was I? I think I was in Tarzana, California. It was these two guys who they cure cancer during the day. They thought it would be really cool to open a nightclub bar, and they were $600,000 in debt. And they were in the office, and they were arguing about the peanut machine at the front door.
Oh my God.
They need to up the peanut machine from 25 cents to 50 cents because they made $17 in peanuts. You know, and John Taffer was like, this is ridiculous. This is peanuts, no pun intended. I mean, these guys, it's just, they're so smart by day and so dumb by night that they're 600 grand in debt and they're worried about peanuts, literally.
Oh my God.
You know, it's just, it's crazy. I mean, it's really fun to go in and just beat these guys up and like really show them the right way. But my favorite thing about the show is we actually really saved them. We put hundreds of thousands of dollars into renovations. we leave a team there to help them. We teach them. You know, there's tons of off-camera stuff that you don't see if you watch the show. I mean, I spend 2 days with them in the kitchen off-camera teaching them. POS people come in, you know, server training. I mean, we really put a ton of work into these guys. And, you know, there are some guys or girls who are just idiots, and they doesn't matter what you give them, they will never succeed. And then there's people that just fall in hard times that, you know, where there was one guy who was in Colorado Springs. It was called the Triple Nickel Tavern. This poor guy lost his sister, his girlfriend, and his dad to cancer all in 1 year.
Oh, my God.
You know, and it's like that'll buckle anyone, you know. So he was like, we felt bad, you know, but he just fell in hard times. He was a smart guy. Just, you know, he was just emotionally buckled, and rightfully so. So some of those episodes are really awesome. John was just in Puerto Rico building a school. It was a special episode. So I really sincerely feel like we do good work. I mean, Paramount's awesome. The network's awesome. I mean, it's just such good people doing good things, you know. And John is just – he's a legend as far as I'm concerned. He's like the Gordon Ramsay for me, you know. He just – he knows his stuff. He goes crazy, but he goes crazy to get people's attention and let them understand that this is how severe it is. I think a lot of times when you're failing, you make a lot of excuses.
Is John Tapper always says – is it just hard to get these guys to understand about seasoning food? Like, I feel like if people could just season their food properly, it would make a giant difference.
It's funny that you say that, because my sort of life motto is I think the difference between a cook and a chef is like a little finesse in the sense of seasoning. You know, yeah. I think the lack of seasoning is such a detrimental thing to making good food. And, you know, it's all over. These stories are crazy. I mean, this guy, you know, is dating a stripper. I mean, the stories are crazy, but the actual bars, they're real bars, and they're really in trouble, and we really try to save them. And I think as of now, Network says that, you know, it's about 80% success rate. So
that's
pretty good, you
that's
know?
Good.
So
that's definitely good.
I think it's yes, we beat them up. Yes, we verbally abuse them and take all their self-esteem.
Good.
But we do build them back up, and we hopefully leave them in a better place than they were before.
You know, it's funny, man, you talk about the seasoning thing. So I judge the National – I'm not sure if you're familiar with ProStart. It's the National Restaurant Association's Education Foundation. They have a program and, you know, high schools all across the country. And so they do these regional competitions, statewide, regional, and then, like, the champions from each state
gotcha.
Come to nationals every year. So these high school kids, and I spend time speaking to every single one of them, my taste and judge, because I ask them, you know, did you season this? And then I say, did you taste it? Did you taste it before you gave it to me? Did you taste it? Because if you're not going to taste the food before you give it to me, I mean, it makes all the difference in the world. Then you'll know, right?
Yeah, what's the point? Right.
You got to taste it. You have to taste it before you give it to me. And so, but it's just little things like that that people don't think about when they've done something so many times. And I think the same thing at a restaurant that may be failing or one of the bars that you at Bar Rescue, they're so used to making their shitty French fries, they don't even think about salting them anymore, you know?
I think that's the one thing in the restaurant that, you know, and I've done it. I'm definitely guilty, but I've really sort of rethought the way I think about food is you can sometimes get a little complacent, and sometimes you can just assume you've made this 30 times, so you assume it's good.
Right.
But maybe that morning someone did something different to the broth or the stock. So I've like re-energized myself into making sure I taste every single piece of food. I think just sometimes you can only taste it so many times. You're like, oh, it's the same every time. But I still am disciplined enough to taste everything that leaves my kitchen just because you never know. You never know. Maybe that one dish that you didn't season is going to a critic or a VIP or something. So I've learned to not take chances when it comes to seasoning and tasting.
100%. Jeff, what you tell them about his book, man? Where can they pre-order that book from?
Well, you can get Buttermilk and Bourbon anywhere books are sold, Amazon, Barnes & Nobles, or Walmart. You can pre-order it now. You can also find it probably at chefjasonsantos.com.
There you go.
Correct.
There you
Correct.
Go. So, dude, I want to ask you about your family life, too, and everything. But you're on the Today Show. That's happening tomorrow morning. You guys are doing a whole segment for the Super Bowl because you're a Boston guy, so I'm guessing you're a Patriots fan, right?
Yeah, huge Patriots fan. Yeah. So this is like a sort of kickoff to the Super Bowl. It's myself and a chef from L.A., Ben Ford, who is actually Harrison Ford's son.
Awesome.
Which is super cool. So we're cooking tomorrow morning. It's a cook-off. We're going to bring our dishes, tailgating concept. And I believe Jenna Bush and Hoda are the judges. And hopefully the best chef wins.
Man, so this goes down. They call you to come do this. You're like, yes, of course. They pair you up with anybody, or is it just like you versus him?
it's this time it's me versus him. Every time I've been on it, I think this is probably my sixth or seventh time on. It's kind of different every time, but this time it's just a one-on-one cook-off. We flip a coin. Whoever cooks first, cooks second, and then they judge, and then you get a trophy, and hopefully I win it for the Patriots.
Now, do you think it is – like, does it say – like, signify if you lose tomorrow that the Patriots will lose the Super Bowl?
Man, I hope not. I think I think regardless of what I do, I mean, I could, like, race lobsters and serve lemonade and maybe lose, but I think the Patriots are going to win. I'm pretty sure it has nothing to do with what I come up with tomorrow.
I'd like to see a lobster race. Could we do that? That would be fun.
Yeah, that would be fun.
That would be amazing. So, well, dude, listen, I'm a diehard Steelers fan, and I can't really talk about, you know, football this season, but I live in a world full of Patriots fans, so I, you know, I respect the Patriots very much. How about that?
Yeah, you know, I'm a fan. I live in Boston, but I'm not like those crazy guys. I mean, I work a ton. I don't often get to watch the games. But I think, you know, regardless whether you're a fan or not, there's just no denying, you know, I mean, between Brady and Belichick, I mean, that dynasty of the Patriots. I mean, they're just – whether you hate their guts, I mean, there's no denying that these guys have something special going on.
That's it, 100%. Absolutely. 100%. Hey, just talking about Boston, man. Is Chef Nick Callias, is he really the mayor up there? Because I tell you what, one of my favorite people in the world, by the way, that guy's awesome. He knows everybody.
I think Nick, sometimes I just sit and I stare at him like real creepily because I can't figure out how that dude is so nice. He is literally in the top three nicest people I've ever met. And like, I used to think it was fake. I was like, nobody's like this. This guy is like, in the history of nice, he's like the nicest guy ever. And I couldn't buy it.
No.
And you know what? He really is that nice. I mean, I'll tweet something, he retweets it. I post something, he'll say good luck. I mean, the dude is legit. His family's legit. The guy can cook his balls off. And,
yes, he can.
And I love him to death, you know. But I wish he was like a little less nice.
He's hiding something, don't you think? Like, there's something suspect there.
Like, there's something, man. Because nobody's that nice. Like,
he's like raising baby elephants in the basement to like get their ivory or something that none of us need to know about, right? There's something weird going on.
Yeah, he's got like a unicorn farm somewhere hidden or something. Like he's already clubs like seals on the weekend.
It's gotta be.
Something is not right. That dude is just far too kind.
It doesn't make any sense. No, I love him very much, man. He's a good brother, a good friend of mine. He's a great guy. And actually, Jeff got to have the Nick experience this past weekend at Mohegan. And he keeps telling me, he's like, we got to call Nick, man. Nick's awesome. I just want to call and like, listen to him talk.
I feel like him and I need to get an apartment in the city and get like matching tattoos or something. Like, he's such a good dude. Or like one of those little baby sacks where I put him on my front chest and I carry him around or something. But he's such a good dude, man.
Can we just say like nothing would make me happier than to see that? That would be so happy.
I just need headshots. I can make it happen.
There you go. Brother, man, so listen, with everything you've got going on, you still have three restaurants and you run these restaurants. How the fuck do you do that?
I mean, you know, I sometimes question that. I mean, I'm exhausted. I'm not going to lie. I'm always tired. I always make sure I hit all three restaurants every day.
I mean, when's the last time you saw your wife? Was it last year? Like, I'm just curious.
I think it was 1987 in the Toronto, Canada region.
Ah, gotcha.
Yeah, my wife is actually out of town. She's a pharma rep, so she sells drugs, essentially.
Oh, good.
And she's away they're launching this new drug, and so she's away for training for 2 weeks. But, you know, I'm at the restaurants all the time. I have unbelievable management. I've had like my chefs that have been there for literally not just a year or two. They've been there for 5-6 years, and they allow me to travel and do all these shows. And, you know, I always say if I go up, they go up. And I feel like sometimes I work harder for them than I do for me, because, you know, for instance, I have this guy, Jeff, who's my chef at Buttermilk, and he's worked so hard for me. He came and just wanted an AM cook position and worked his way up to the executive chef of Buttermilk and Bourbon.
No shit.
And I'm making him a small partner in the next Buttermilk and Bourbon for two reasons. One, he deserves it. And he, you know, it works super hard. My book wouldn't be where it is without him. The restaurant wouldn't be. And two, so he can never leave, you know?
Right.
So it's a win-win. So we are going to be partners in the next restaurant. And I think he deserves every ounce of that. You know, you can't do it by yourself. It's not possible as you grow. You have to start building that infrastructure and that team. And, you know, so far, so good. We're getting ready to start construction on a fourth restaurant. And I got a fifth in the works. I've just been offered to speak to a place at the Patriots. So, I mean, I got a lot going on. I just, it's for me, it's time management. You know, I'm at this point, I'm starting to run out of daylight. So I just need to, unfortunately, start to sort of focus a little bit better. But, you know, I go in traveling spots. I've been away, you know, essentially the whole month. I'm home for a month before I leave for Bar Rescue. So I go in spurts. Instead of just kind of always traveling, I try to do it for a couple months. Then I spend a ton of time in the restaurants, do it for a couple months, you know. So I try to balance it like that. But I'm pretty good. I'm a pretty even-keeled guy. I don't have much of a temper. I just like to get things done. I like to enjoy what I do, and I want to have a good time. If I can't have a good time, I'm not doing it. So it's a good way to weed a lot of things out.
Well, it's one of the things I was saying, you know, when we were hanging out at the event this past weekend. I was like, he's just a nice guy. Just like a really nice guy. You want to keep talking to him. Like, he's a nice dude. Like, he's friendly. I don't really have a big picture of you ever getting that angry, but I'm betting on Bar Rescue you kind of flip your lid on some people.
Yeah, you know, I do. But I also, it comes from a good place. I mean, I think I do it to just show them. Sometimes these guys don't realize that they're so far off and such on the wrong path. And sometimes you have to get a little crazy to bring attention to it and to let them see and to kick them out of being complacent. You know, I mean, you got to get out of that complacency. So, but I just, you know, I always say this, like, you don't have to be a dick to be good at what you do. You know, it's like, you don't have to be a jerk to people, or you don't have to go around telling people how famous you are or this and that. I mean, if you have to go around telling people how famous you are, you're probably not very famous, you know? So I just think my motto is just be kind, you know, just be kind to everybody, love what you do. And hopefully that is that passion and that being a nice guy is infectious and it makes people want to give you opportunities and be around you. And I think I try to just be a good guy, you know?
Yeah, well, I think you accomplished that pretty well, man. So listen, you have three restaurants. You were just telling a story about the guy who came as an AM cook and he's now a partner. Dude, finding help is really hard to do. Finding good help is even harder to do.
I mean, it's brutal.
Unbelievable,
it's brutal.
Right? I mean, shit.
Yeah. I mean, I almost didn't open a third restaurant because I was concerned about getting staff for it. You know, I mean, same thing. I have all this opportunity to grow at an exponential rate, but I just have to do it the right way. And I have to make sure I have the right people. And it's tough, man. I mean, 10 years ago it was we chef, no chef. And, you know, you could do whatever you want, get pans thrown at you. You know, I always joke. It's like Gordon Ramsay will throw a pan and swear and tell you to do something. Now it's like, you know, instead of yelling at someone, you know, give me this, that you have to say, you know, pardon me, sir, would you be so kind as to pass the shallots? You know, right. It's like, you right. can't offend anybody. I mean, it's just, it's tough. I mean, it's probably my
it's
biggest
so
stress when it comes to my businesses.
So what do you look for, man? Is it something you can see in somebody when you first talk to them in an interview, or is it take
you know,
some time to figure it out?
It morphs over the years. You know, 10 years ago, it's like getting the best cook in the kitchen. Now, it's getting someone with the best work ethic. I mean, I can teach someone to cook. I can't teach them to be on time. You know, right. I can teach someone to hold a knife. I can't teach them to be a good person, you know? So I sort of look for quality people that have some ambition. And if they have ambition and they want to grow and they want to move up, I think those are the guys, you know? It's the guys that are entitled and don't want to work hard and think they deserve it. I'm just not interested. I'm very hands-on. When I'm at my restaurant, I work on the line every single night, you know? So if someone's not going to cut it, I'll just do it myself,
right.
you know? So
anyway,
it's just how it's got to be.
You either want to be here or you don't, right?
Yeah, it's like I'm not forcing you.
Right, that's all it is to it. Hey, man, what about social media when it comes to the business today, especially with the restaurants? Like, do you find social media playing a bigger part in your advertising game when it comes to the restaurants now? And if so, like, which one do you think matters the most? Is it Instagram? Is it Facebook? What's doing the most for you?
You know, I'm a big social media person in the sense that I have a presence. I try to be consistent, but I honestly love it. You know, I think it's just I have a restaurant called Citrus and Salt, and it's a coastal Mexican, and it's very opposite of Buttermilk and Bourbon. Buttermilk and Bourbon is like dark and bourbon, and the food's a little heavier, and it's like, man. And Citrus and Salt is more feminine, and drinks are flowery and summery. And, you know, and so we have tons of women. And we joke, we'll look into the dining room, and 90% of the dining room has their phone out, you know? Wow. And we do it intentionally. We do a lot of stuff that's very Instagrammable, but at the same time, it's kind of sad that like they're not enjoying what's in front of them. They have to get that picture. So it's a blessing and a curse, I think. And I think, you know, it's either you change the times or the times are going to change you, you know. So I try to play by the rules and do what's right and make things that are exciting. And I think nowadays, you know, with social media, you have to create a reaction. And if, you know, if that food plate of food goes down in front of you and it doesn't make you want to whip out your phone and take a picture, I've failed, you know. And if a drink comes down in front of you and you don't want to snap a picture before taking a sip, I mean, I failed. So I think we're sort of in the business of creating reactions nowadays. I think gone are the days where it's just about good food. I think it's way more than that. It's about, you know, dinner and a show, for lack of a better term. You know, I think it's just we're in the business to create reactions.
That's a really good line, man. In the business to create reactions. I love that. That's solid right there. I think people should think about that more and more. So you think Instagram is probably the way to go with food?
I go on binges. At first it was like just Facebook, and then I was all about Twitter. Yeah. And now, like, I pretty much retweet. I don't even think I tweet anymore. And I just like Instagram because I think, you know, people are more visionary. They want to see what's in front of them. And I think for me, I personally like Instagram. So I think it's cool. And I think as a chef, you get to see everybody's food. I think that's really cool. And it's very inspiring, you know. Sometimes 100%. I'll write in a menu and I'm like, oh, I want to, you know, the Mexican place. We want to come up with, a tamale. I'll just hashtag tamale and look at 1,000 pictures and be inspired. So, I mean, it's a great way to learn as well. So I do think it's a good thing. I just think, like anything, it's just, you know, there's a little bit of balance that needs to be had.
Dude, no doubt about it. You guys, make sure you check out Chef tomorrow on the Today Show. That's going to be amazing. Bar Rescue comes back next Sunday as well. It's 9 o'clock, right?
Yes, sir.
You got to check that out. The cookbook, you can find it, pre-order it on Amazon, of course, from Walmart and Barnes & Noble. And Jeff, what's his Instagram?
Instagram is @Jason64764.
Dude, what's up with the numbers?
Well, you know, it's funny. I tried to get Chef Jason Santos, but there's a Chef Jason Santos. I've even reached out to him and tried to buy his Instagram. But that's my Instagram from, like, literally, you know, I had no choice. It was like everything I wanted was taken. So, I used to be the chef at a restaurant called Tremont 647. So it was Jason 647, and then I had to add more numbers. Long story. But, yeah, I'm not psyched about it.
What did dude say when you tried to get the Instagram handle from him?
I just got a reply that said no. And I said I'll buy it from you, you know?
Yeah.
It's just to make everything with some more continuity. Sure. But, yeah, he's not interested, I guess.
I had about six fake Chef Plum accounts show up about a year ago, which is hysterical. People were actually taking my pictures, and it was supposed to be me, and it wasn't. And getting it shut down is such a pain in the ass.
It's such a – yeah, I've reached out to Instagram because there's another one that's pretty close that's inactive, but they – you know, it's not an option at this point. So it's crazy, I just stick with my name and a bunch of numbers.
That's what you should make all of it. Just make all of it a bunch of numbers in your name, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, dude, man, I appreciate your time tonight, dude. You're such a great guy to talk to. Next time I'm in Boston, I'm definitely coming to eat. That's for sure. I love Southern food. Are you kidding me? I grew up down south. That's what I got to have. You know, I want to taste the biscuits.
The biscuits, dude,
I'm going to eat and go to church afterwards. I want to have those biscuits.
Yeah, you need like a dark room and like an air conditioner after you eat a couple biscuits.
Wow. That sounds like what happened after I had my twins. But, dude, I'm so happy I got the chance to spend the time with you at Mohegan Sun this past week. I look forward to hopefully getting the chance to do it again. You're a good brother. Anything I can ever do, reach out, please. I'm happy to. Not that you need my help, but I'm a firm believer in if we all work together to make one big pie, we can all get some. So,
of course. I do love a good pie.
That's for sure. So, brother, we appreciate your time tonight, man, and we'll check you out on down the road, all right?
I appreciate you guys. Thank you very much for having me. It's awesome.
Great to meet you, man.
Very well done. Thank you, man. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, brother. We'll see you. There he goes, the one and only Chef Jason Santos. What a great guy, huh?
Awesome.
He's a good brother for sure.
Awesome.
Love hearing his stories.
Yeah, dude. He's great
hustling.
Dude.
He's hustling.
Dude, I just can't believe he has three restaurants and he's doing so much TV. It's like he must have the most amazing team because, like, you know, just I've only run one restaurant at a time and it's, you know, you get so I get so fucking psychotic about it.
Well, you gotta be, but the way he's doing it, man, he's crushing it. He's got Bar Rescue, he's on the Today Show.
Super cool. And all the guys that were working for him at the thing were like loving him. I mean, I talked to a few dudes that were around him, and like they were like, oh, he's a man. Like, you know, I chatted up all the underlings.
Well, this is a guy, you know, if you're in culinary school, if you're a young chef coming up, this is a guy you should follow and kind of keep your eye on because he's doing things the right way. And there's a lot you can learn from even following a guy like him on Instagram or just seeing him at events and festivals and taking a couple seconds to talk. Because trust me, he'll talk to you. He's a super nice guy. He'll talk to everybody. Easy.
Absolutely.
Easy day.
He was really, really, really nice in the kitchen. He was like super approachable. He was one of the few chefs that was like smiling when you looked at him. You know, everybody's like so in their head, And it's almost intimidating, you know, when you look at different people, because you're like, you know, you're working, so you have shit going on. You're, and, you know, sometimes they're not happy. And he's just, he was just like happy, always just like, what's up, man? Hey, you know, like, I loved it.
Yeah, it was awesome, man. It was really, really great. And so happy to have him on the show. We'll definitely keep an eye on him and find out about that book and check out the Today Show and, of course, Bar Rescue. So many things going on. But, Jeff, I wanted to end the show tonight just kind of recapping a little bit from the Food and Wine Fest. It's one of the best festivals of the year. I love doing it. I love being such a part of it. Lindsay works so hard on it. Shout out to her. Shout out to Mohegan Sun. What a great, great event, man. If you had to sum up your favorite thing that we did there, what would it be?
My favorite thing. I mean, we did a lot of fun stuff, so it's hard. Probably winning money at the slot machine.
I'm just joking.
No, my favorite thing was probably the celebrity dine around. You know, I really liked getting to taste people's food, or like, you know, or the, you know, whatever. Getting to meet people or not meet people was pretty cool. And
I lost my voice that night from all my screaming. I was doing a lot of yelling.
That part was I mean, we had a crowd and we were like working them, and then you left me for a while, and I kept trying to keep the energy up. We were having fun. I got the interns working with us. You know, you were having people clap and cheer me on as I was trying not to sweat on the burgers. It was great.
But yeah, it's just, there's so many great people at that event, man. Our friend Michelle Ragusas is there. Of course, Jason was there. I mean, so many great chefs are just there hanging out. And
yeah.
I mean, Nick Callias, of course. I had to get the Nick Callias plug in there. You heard that, right?
Callias. That guy Lemmy was really, really nice.
Yeah, yeah.
That girl, Chef Aaron, and James from Marcus Samuelson's team, they were really cool. You know, Manit was such a sweetheart.
Manit's the best. I wish I could spend more time with her. You and I did open up a case of Mexican Coca-Cola for her. And I tried to take one, but she had them all counted.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really funny, though, because she came over to me because she was like, I know, Plum, that you can open a bottle. You have a bottle opener somewhere on you. And I was kind of like, wait, what are you trying to say? Because the last year she was on the show, we were all drinking. It was kind of nutty. But yeah, what a great event, man. I love it so much. It's such a fun event. I mean, being involved, doing the demo was so fun this year. If you guys haven't, you can check out the Instagram page. I stole a woman's phone during the demo, which was great. And Jeff and I were throwing shirts at people. Very, very fun event, man. So just a huge thank you to everybody who came. Thank you to Mohegan, and thank you to Lindsay for giving me the opportunity to be there and have Jeff with me to be there and taking such great care of my wife and everybody. Just it really is. It's just such a phenomenal event. So thank you to everybody there for letting that happen. We really appreciate that.
Definitely. It was by far the best food event I've ever done. And I've definitely done a few. That one's... they really do take care of the chefs. Not only take care of the chefs. I mean, the vibe of the whole thing is set by Mohegan Sun and just how welcoming they are to us and how, it's like,
I mean, the whole place just buzzes. It's buzzing from the moment you walk in the door, isn't it?
Well, it's not even that, but it's like, you know, when you get behind the scenes and you meet Tammy and those people, and it's everything is yes.
Right.
They just want it to be awesome. And with that energy coming at you, it's just so hard not to just, like, go, you know, and that I think that's hard to do because they're busy. I mean, that's a huge kitchen.
That's only one of them. There's a bunch of those,
regardless
kitchens.
If we're in their way or not. So it was pretty impressive.
You know, you see a place like that and, you know, you realize, I mean, that place employs 10,000 people. I'm gonna try to get Lindsay on this program here. I think I'd like to talk to her, but they employ 10,000 people. They have so many kitchens.
Great.
There's got to be 200 kitchens in that building. Got to be, right, with all the restaurants.
I mean, 100? Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I mean, there's the two giant banquet kitchens, and we were only in one piece of the banquet kitchen. There's like a garde-manger section. There's a dessert section.
There's a room service kitchen.
You know what I mean? Like, there's like, exactly. There's so many kitchens on the one side. And then if you go to the other side, the other tower, there's like, they mirrored it. So they have all those same kitchens over there. And then like you just said, there's all these restaurants. I mean, there's a Pepe's Pizza, for God's sakes, in there. It's pretty cool. It was definitely, like you said, we didn't see the sun for 4 days. We just, like, rocked around, like, the magical paradise that's Mohegan Sun. You know, it was cool.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what it was. It's the magical paradise that is Mohegan Sun. I like the way you put that. That's very, very true. It's exactly what it's like, man. Hey, we even had a great dinner at Tuscany that night, remember, over with Dave?
We had a great dinner at Tuscany.
It was delicious, and they took care of us very well. Oh, speaking of Dave, I hear Best Around. Dave, you there?
What? What's going on, baby?
He's crashing the party. Dave is in the building. What's up, Chef Dave?
Not much, just cruising home.
All right. Well, we just had a great interview with the one only chef, Jason Santos. We're just recapping the Mohegan Sun a little bit before we got out of here, brother. It was a great dinner you gave for us on Friday night, you and Chef Sean over there in Tuscany. We really appreciate it. That was Thursday night, right? Thursday night. We really appreciate
Thursday
that.
Yeah, anytime, man.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was really, really nice, man. It was great. Especially you had the Navy guys in there with us, remember?
Yeah, I'm glad you guys enjoyed it. That's how you come in. I was like, all right, we're just going to send some stuff out. So
we were just coming to mess with you. We were coming to yell at you. We were coming just to holler at you. And then we're like, I guess we're sitting down.
Oh, yeah, you know I got to feed people, man.
That's what's up. But yeah, that food was great. And we just talked. I mean, the whole, it was just such a great event, man. We look forward to hopefully having a chance to do it again. Dave, this show might end up moving to Thursdays. We might need to adjust your schedule some.
Oh, man. I don't know.
You can't come on to co-host at 5 till.
What's that?
You can't come on and co-host at 5 till.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying.
I mean, we're 55 minutes into the show, and, like, now you show up.
Well, was it fashionably late? Fashionably late or something?
I appreciate that. I appreciate that. I mean, it could be like the show we did live from Mohegan Sun, which was a bit of a train wreck. However, it was funny.
That's true. I could just come in and end the damn show. Just like.
Speaking of that, though, I really wanted to cut a promo for Jason.
Oh, I bet you did.
I was like itching to do it. I wanted to so bad. I wanted to call him the blue-eyed bandit, but I can't stand it. God damn it.
Oh, shit.
I had this whole rhyme worked out in my head that I was going to, like, I was going to go off about.
Hey, what's up?
No, I don't want to. I'm just saying. We'll do it again. We'll have him on again.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
We'll have him on again. Work it up. We'll hit him with the promo.
That's too funny.
But I really wanted to. I just like.
Is that going to be your gimmick? Is that your gimmick now? You're going to cut promos for people, like as if they're strippers.
I can either do stripper promos. We can, you know, I can definitely announce a wrestling promo.
You never get a stripper promo for me, bro.
Well, we don't have a real stripper name for you, though, Dave.
We got to work on that.
Well, you know what? We'd have to do the Shaft music, and I would just go, Dave.
Fuck yeah. It's Dave.
That seems legit.
Fuck yeah.
Yep.
Well, look.
Dragon.
Dave, make sure you please give our best to Chef Sean and everybody over at Tuscany and thank them again for us. We really appreciate all the hospitality they showed. It really does. It feels like home when you can go there. You see some family like Dave and Sean and have them just take care of you, man. It feels great to have that note that's there. And, you know, definitely not expected, but 100% appreciated.
Oh, yeah, anytime.
Yeah, that was. I mean, it was almost too much food.
if we kept sitting there, it would have been, because they were going to send more shit out.
I know. We were like, we have to pull the plug now before.
Well, they saw you and me walk in, and they were like, oh, shit, we better get 15 courses ready for those boys.
I didn't even eat prior to that, though. I had just eaten something, I feel like, earlier that day. I can't remember.
We were doing the Boston and the bourbon thing or whatever. I don't know. We were eating something.
Yeah. We're eating stuff over there. And then the bird. Oh, man. What a great event.
Such a fun event. Dave, listen, I want you to drive safe. It's super cold outside, so be careful.
Oh, it's like, I feel like I almost stuck to my seat when I sat down type of cold.
Ew. Yeah, that's kind of gross. Well,
I just got off work, so, you know, another reason.
My tears stuff froze.
Your what froze?
My tears.
Oh, you were crying.
I was walking. No, only my eyes were, like, showing because I was wearing, like, a face mask, and the wind kept blowing in my face, and my tears froze on my cheeks.
Well, there you
go. Kind of like, what is it, Audrey off National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, where her eyes just kind of, like, froze.
Exactly.
That's funny, man. That's funny. Well, look, I look forward to next year recapping, and we're going to move forward now. This is Season 7, Episode 2. 7 years of doing this damn program. I can't believe it. And it's only getting stronger and bigger, man. Changing and changing. We got big plans. Jeffy's taking the role of a producer now, so we've got some plans. Somebody to help me with things, which is awesome because I needed it.
Absolutely.
So it's going to be awesome.
No, nah.
But, yeah, so we're that's what's up. Dave, you're late. You're getting a write-up for that, okay?
I can't get one more ROD.
Yep. I don't know what ROD stands for, but you're it. Whatever it is, you got one.
It's record of discussion.
Yeah, that's what it is. That's what it is. All right, I'm going to put a bow on this one, gentlemen. You guys ready?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Jeffy, I appreciate you. Thank you so much for sitting in with me tonight. Dave, always a pleasure hearing from you and talking to you, good brother. Big shout out to good brother Chef Jason Santos. Check him out tomorrow on the Today Show and his brand new book. And don't forget Bar Rescue. Ladies and gentlemen, remember, food is one of the most important things we have in life. Everything important in life revolves around food. We'll see you next week. Peace.
Thank you for listening to Plum Love Foods Live. See you next week, good brothers and sisters.
And rest in peace, Larry Mangum. GBM forever, baby.